This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Up next, Anthony DeMaria talks with Finn Gustafson, Director of Advanced Heart Failure Program with the Department of Cardiology at the Riggs Hospital at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. They cover improving the quality of life in advanced heart failure patients with LVAD. What does the evidence tell us?
Welcome to AXL, Finn. Tell me, what's the background of this issue?
So I think, first of all, many of us have been thinking about LVADs as something we use as bridge to transplantation in younger individuals for a short period of time. But the reality today is that actually the majority of LVADs are implanted as destination therapy, so really as a final therapy. And even those who get the VADs as bridge to transplant tend to have very long wait times, especially in Europe. Around 10% get transplanted after 2 years if they are on a VAD and waiting. So we're really looking at now at a long-term therapy. And this, together with the fact that survival has improved so tremendously with these devices, we're looking at 2 year survival around 85%. We're shifting the focus more from just surviving to surviving with a good life.
Yeah, it's a little reminiscent of cancer, isn't it? Where cancer is becoming a chronic disease where the end result may not differ very much, but there's a long period of chronicity, and it sounds like that's what we're dealing with the LVADs. We're not thinking of them as terminating so quickly, but rather as a chronic process. So how do we increase their quality of life? I mean, walking around with a device that's susceptible to a lot of problems.
First of all, I think the majority of patients actually have a very significant improvement in quality of life when they get the device. We know that from several studies. Also, most of the patients experience much improvement in their heart failure symptoms, of course. So after 3 months, around 80% are in New York Heart Association class 1 or 2 after an LVAD implant and stay there for 2 years, at least, as long as that's the data we have. So most of them do real well. Around 20% don't really improve significantly, and their exercise capacity is also lower than we would expect, having sort of fixed their circulation to some extent. So there is really some challenges there. And the third leg of this is the adverse events. So that's bleeding, it's arrhythmias, it's right heart failure, and infection from, especially with the exit side from the driveline. And these are the areas that we need to try and address to improve quality of life in those patients who didn't get it in the first place or experience adverse events along the way, because clearly adverse events are linked to poorer quality of life, poorer exercise capacity. And this is where the field, I think, is right now, is how do we improve these factors?
Sure. Well, how do we? That's the $64 question, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's actually the most interesting part, because I think we are shifting away from just putting these devices in and reporting outcomes, and we are turning to randomized clinical trials. And I think this is an exciting new era for this field. We are starting soon a trial to lower the antithrombotic therapy in these patients to avoid bleeding, which is something that occurs in around 1/3 of patients. Because the new technology in the devices that have, in some devices, almost alleviated completely the pump thrombosis complication, we're using this to design trials to try and lower the risk of an adverse event like bleeding. And I think it's exciting that we're not just doing it and reporting it, but now really starting to mature as a discipline in heart failure and actually do randomized clinical trials with this. So we saw that with the Momentum 3 trial, which was published recently. Also a large, well-done randomized trial from the US comparing two devices really has given us a lot of new information that we are building on to generate these trials.
Have we made any gains in terms of infection? Are there any new strategies?
So I think infection is, which probably occurs in almost half of the patients somewhere along the way, and which unfortunately often leads to secondary complications like bleeding episodes or thrombosis because of interference with the hemostatic system somehow. It's probably one of the areas where we've made less progress, and certainly an area where we need to focus more. We have recently published new guidelines on how to prevent it and manage it, and hopefully more strict protocols there will be improving the situation. One trial has looked at the way the dry line exits, actually a randomized trial, and also has, we're gaining a little bit of insight, but this is probably an area where we need to do more and to improve the quality of life of patients better. But with respect to the bleeding and thrombosis, I think the device improvement has helped us there, and we'll hopefully see improvements also there with these new strategies, new trials. And I think with respect to right heart failure, we are also learning now from trials where specifically also randomized trials coming out of Chicago, looking at optimizing pump settings and medications with right heart catheterization and echo and tuning these devices to avoid late right ventricular failure. And I think we're working on all of these areas, and I'm confident that this will improve functional capacity, quality of life of these patients. Infection is one of them that we have not done well enough with yet.
Just to put it in perspective, as you say, an average lifespan of 2 years, let's say, for an LVAD patient, how many of these adverse events will the average patient experience during that two-year period?
The average lifespan of a VAD patient with these with destination therapy is actually around 5 years.
I was thinking prior to transplant, 2 years, 5 years.
Two-thirds of patients will actually, even within the first 6 to 12 months, have a hospitalization for an adverse event. Luckily, the majority of these are manageable, treatable, and the patients will regain full function and good quality of life afterwards. But it is really the majority of patients will experience an adverse event somewhere along the way, for sure.
Would you say it's more than one a year?
I would say it's extremely patient dependent. Some patients basically never have an adverse event, and some have, unfortunately, multiple. So on average, yes, probably around one event per year. But some patients, unfortunately, carry the burden with respect to these adverse events, so they have multiple admissions for adverse events.
What about the psychological support of these patients? I'm not a heart failure specialist, but I cover those patients. I have my own patients that I send ultimately for advanced therapy. And of course, there's a psychological burden associated with the fact that you're now machine dependent to some degree. Is there any progress made in that area?
There is, and that job is really carried a lot by our good colleagues and collaborators in the allied health field. And they're doing very important work with this. I think we found out that this work starts already before implantation, not just with the patient, but also with their relatives. So the conversation conversations you need to have with the patients and the relatives prior to implant, setting up the expectations for what this is all about, is extremely important. And then down the road, of course, the psychosocial support of the VAD program and the people that work with it to the patients, and importantly also to the network and the support people that the patients have, is extremely important. Not many randomized trials in this field yet, but a lot of information has been gained. And I think most important is that we've learned that we cannot underestimate this factor and that the job starts already prior to implantation.
From the perspective of someone who's not involved, I've always viewed LVADs as taking a terrible disease and replacing it with something that's much better but still imperfect than leaving someone with a chronic disease. And I guess your message is now that we've overcome some of the major adverse events that would befall patients, that we're now focusing on making that period of time during which they're surviving as high quality as possible. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
I think that's a very fair assessment of the situation. Absolutely. Fortunately, progress is made all the time. And I think we will see more progress in the coming year with respect to that, because it's going to be difficult to improve the survival much more, because it's already really so good that that is more to do with the patient selection. In the end, you take some very sick patients sometimes, it just can't go. So yes, we will improve that further.
Possibly device improvement?
Absolutely. Recently, there was a publication on a fully implantable continuous flow device with percutaneous energy transfer to patients. Although there for sure will be some challenges with systems like that, it tells us that we will be moving in that direction for sure. And I think, obviously, that will be hopefully the end to the burden of the infectious complications. And that would be a huge leap forward.
Well, very encouraging. Thanks a million for sharing this.
Thanks for having me.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.